It's that time of the week again, the most horrific time of the week, where both Steve and Rafe are wondering, how is Ewan going to introduce this week's All About Symbian Inside podcast? Now we've given him the little badge that says you can do the comparing. Well, I'm going to be perfectly sensible this week and keep you all off balance. It's All About Symbian Insight number 107. I'm Ewan Spence, and coming out of the corner, not caring but wondering what's going to happen, we have Steve Litchfield.
I'm here with the Lurgy, but I'll survive.
And Rafe Blandford.
Hello, everybody.
And Steve, how come you've got the Lurgy? I mean, I can realise that Rafe, being out all the time drinking heavily in Barcelona, comes back with the MWC Lurgy, but you don't ever go anywhere.
Yes, but I have a family, and they go out into schools and mix with hundreds of other children and teachers, and they all bring the germs back for me.
Oh, thank you. Know, Steve does go places. He's been testing Ovi Maps very hard this week.
Indeed, and I went to the supermarket a week ago.
I went to the supermarket.
Actually, yes. I also did a trip up to York, and there'll be some editorials coming out of the interesting times I had trying to conduct an online lifestyle when there's only one bar of GSM signal. And to get any kind of data, you have to hold your smartphone in a particular spot, in a particular room, in a particular way, and try not to get your fingers near the aerial, and somehow to conduct business like that. So there's an editorial or a rant coming out of the fact that not everywhere in the world is quite as connected as Silicon Valley or central London.
So obviously Steve is available if you'd like someone to do Grandpa Simpson impersonations at your parties or bar mitzvahs. Back in my day, we had a little pull-out aerials and everything. Yes, we've had MWC, and you might think there's a little bit of a lull, but the news never stops. We've got Maps news coming up we can talk about. We've got applications updates and new stuff coming up, but we've also got, you know, as Rafe said there, bouncing around MWC, there's a lot of compressing of gathering information, and as it comes back out, it takes a little bit longer, and you start to find some real gems. And the video interviews that Rafe and the other Ewan from the other place did with Ansi, Mr. Stromberg, have proved great guns. They've been picked up all around the internet, proper commentary about Nokia's coming out and talking clearly about their past strategy and going forward. Rafe, I think congratulations are in order for you.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Ewan. It was certainly a real insight to actually do these, because having a key high-level executive talk quite so candidly about Nokia's issues with the N97, I mean, what he basically said was the N97 was a commercial success for Ewan, but they appreciate that it's been a very poor user experience for a lot of people, and they were disappointed with that and sort of mitigating that and fixing it through things like the firmware updates of V20 and V21, not only took more effort than they wanted, but took a lot longer as well. But at the same time, the message was coming across that Nokia are listening to the problems and they have learned from it and implementing that for Symbian 3 and the Symbian 3 devices. And as we've said several times before, you know, people ask us, well, what about the X6 or other devices that have followed on, where haven't they learned from that? From the N97 with those. The answer to that is, you know, they can do a certain amount, but much of this has to happen between the sort of major point releases of devices. To understand this, you have to understand that Nokia creates sort of product families around a release. And that would be something like all the S60 fifth edition devices. To a certain extent, that will also include N series and E series devices in the past. And you mentioned the interview, one of the things that came out of that was that by giving Symbian the platform to the Symbian Foundation, Nokia were hoping that there'll be a move away from sort of variants around product platforms, i.e. N-series, E-series numbered devices, which would make things not only easier for them in terms of managing developer resources, but also a lot easier for developers, who I know in the past has complained that, you know, even when it's running theoretically the same version of Symbian, that there are differences which impact on their programs. So that was very interesting, and there's lots of other bits and pieces from the ANSI interviews that I think people would be interested in hearing about. So should I share a few of those?
Yeah, well, first of all, I just love the idea, the insight that the family, so the N97, the N97 Mini, the X6, the 5800, they're all essentially, in Nokia's mind, the same blob. So if the early planning on that bit of blob, the RAM issue being one of them, is wrong, then the whole thing seems to go wrong. And that seems to be what he was going on about, the quality control at the start of the process.
That's absolutely right. And it's really important to understand that. And of course, the reason they do it in these blobs is because that represents a very significant saving in terms of the platform advantage. You know, having to integrate the products individually would be much more expensive, and that's why the likes of Sony Ericsson and Samsung have had more trouble implemented Symbian devices, and why Nokia has been able to do it more effectively and cheaply.
And of course, if the next blob gets everything right, then there's a whole series of phones that are on top of the world.
Absolutely, and I think you could draw an analogy here to the N95. Now, the N95, as we all know, had software problems initially, but there was little to complain about its hardware, and that sort of went into devices like the N82, for example, and others. One of the things they, released was the N95 8GB, which effectively had the N95, but with mature software, and that was incredibly well received. So it'll be interesting to see, and Nokia certainly have every confidence that they will do the same thing with the Symbian 3 devices, which we can expect to see on the market sort of June, July time, maybe a little bit after that. Certainly, I suspect we'll be seeing the announcement of them sometime in the next 2 or 3 months.
I know you want to bring up some highlights, but just one final question from me on the stuff that you dealt with the ANSI and the Nokia ones, if you don't mind, Rafe, which is, have you been able to work out when they worked out that blob of the N97 family went wrong? When did they realise, oh, poo?
That's a difficult question to answer, because obviously I didn't get a direct answer to that, and you're very unlikely to get an answer to that. I suspect this is a case of, Nokia are not a stupid company. They knew early on that there would be risk factors with this, as with any release, and they perhaps just miscalculated on how serious it would be. So presumably, right early on, they knew there may be a few issues with RAM, because they do a lot of in-depth testing themselves. But seeing an issue in the test labs is very different to seeing it emerge when you release a device onto the market. And in all fairness to them, if you look at something like the 5800, yes, that had similar problems in the software. It wasn't quite there when it first came out, and sort of, I guess it was, it's only actually 14 months ago or so, 16 months ago. But that very quickly got to the point where it's very mature. Now, I think most people would look at the 5800 and say, great value device, pretty stable, functionally very rich. But it's really part of the same blob as the N97. If you look at it, there are clearly some differences in things like the C drive, and I think that's one critical area where Nokia did make a mistake, and they were able to fix it very quickly for the N97 Mini. But the RAM and the processor between the N97 and 5800 are very similar in terms of the sort of the family. The N97 was particularly bad, perhaps because of the type of users that were attracted to it and what they were expecting from the device. Yet the 5800, and so predicting that kind of thing is actually much more difficult, because that's looking at usage patterns and how people experience a device. And it was perhaps because the N97 was held up as such a flagship, and you set that in the context of the expectations around the iPhone and the Android devices, and it didn't quite measure up. If you take away the iPhone and Android devices, which obviously is a false atmosphere, the N97 would look much better, and people would go, yeah, it's cutting edge, so it's a bit problematic. And I think you can absolutely overemphasize the problems with the N97. If you look at the fact you can now send your N97 off for warranty repair to fix the problems with things like the camera lens and the GPS antenna, if you've even been having them. I mean, I've got an original N97 and really never had those issues. You can update the firmware. Now, getting an N97 or indeed an N97 Mini out of the box, you get a very high quality device. And I think for 80-90% of people, they won't ever notice an issue with it, and they will look at the capabilities it has in terms of things like the free navigation, very good camera, certainly better, I would say, than its competitors, decent web browsing, a very rich functionality out of the box. You don't necessarily need to add third-party software to it, and its hybrid nature, the fact it's a very usable keyboard and touchscreen device and one-handed, and a lot of people are going to rate that ahead of some of its competitors. And I know Steve and I would agree that the N97 Mini is probably still the best smartphone that money can buy if you're looking for sort of real-world use rather than pure flashiness. Now, obviously, it is very subjective and depends on the user, but I think the impact of the N97 issues have given it an unfair reputation now, and that's reflecting the fact it's pretty popular outside the geek markets, just as something like the 5800, 5530 and 5230 are becoming, and that's why Nokia's been able to continue to sell at such a rate, and indeed was the biggest manufacturer of touchscreen smartphones in the last quarter.
Yeah, absolutely. I would just say that people have raised the point quite fairly that if you bought an N97 in July 2009 and you had all the early adopter problems, and you're even now just about getting the hardware problems fixed, and the firmware is even now just being made to the point where it's, you know, usable for a real geek, a real early adopter, then you will feel rather hard done by that Nokia used you as a public hardware beta tester. And it would be great, wouldn't it be great, if Nokia came out and on their next release said, if you bought an N97 between these months, we're going to offer you an extra £50 off or an extra £80 off, just as a gesture, something just to throw a bone to all the people who did get burned with the N97.
Whoa, that would kill fiduciary responsibility for the board. It would create a precedent for any faults in any devices. People could then argue that they've had a fault with device X or device Y, and the margins are going to be razor slim over the next couple of years with the fall of the euro, the world economy, and the rising of the Far East, where these phones are manufactured. No company in the world with shareholders would even countenance that. It's a great idea, but that's as far as it could go.
Absolutely. I think it's completely unrealistic from a commercial point of view. And honestly, the fact that Nokia has gone to such pains to update the software and fix hardware problems.
They could argue they've already done it.
You know, that's pretty amazing in itself. You look at other phones that might fit into this category. And I wouldn't say something like the Samsung i910 is anywhere near that, but certainly the firmware updates on that have been much better on the N97 and arguably some of the hardware issues. And if you look back at other things as well, I think people expecting that kind of thing are unrealistic. And, you know, people talk about the damage done to Nokia by the N97, and I'm sorry, but in the grand scheme of things, if you look at it from a high level view, it's much, much smaller than people really think it is who are typically writing on blogs or commenting in the forums. You know, a far more dramatic impact is from things like the battery recall that happened a few years ago. You know, people will remember that kind of thing far more than the issue with one handset. If Nokia kept on doing this, yes, I agree, it would be a more serious issue. But assuming they get Symbian 3 good, and I wouldn't even say it has to be outstanding, the loyalty to the Nokia brand cannot be underestimated, because I think the other thing to bear in mind, as we suggested earlier, the number of people having problems, the people having problems with the N97 were tending to be those who pushed it particularly hard. And they are actually only a relatively small percentage of the users. It's, you know, definitely a truism that most people, even smartphone owners, only use a small proportion of their handset's capabilities. You know, you see people using an iPhone really just as a, you know, an iPod effectively, or equally you see people using, you know, an N86 or an N97 mini just as a phone, and it becomes as much a status symbol. But, you know, that debate could run and run.
I just thought it was a good idea.
If you'd like to hire Steve to be your new CEO, then apply in writing to Steve Litchfield, care of allaboutsymbian.com.
And you will then need you and Spence accounting and...
Well, I thought I was going to draw up the company charter and have it and it is and just leave that all strewn out for you. Right then, while we carry on with the horrible stuff, as always, you can leave your comments for all the Insight podcasts. You can leave them on the actual posts we make for the show. Also, you can email them into us, rafe@allaboutsymbian.com is probably the easiest one. We're all available on Twitter at Steve Litchfield, at Rafe Banford, at AES, and at Ewan. And Rafe, you did hours of video. We had three of the ANSI ones, and you've already created great waves in all the gadget blogs and everything for what you've managed to capture. Highlights coming up in the next week or two?
Well, highlights coming out. I just want to mention briefly the last video we did, some really interesting stuff on the future where ANSI Vanyoka sees Symbian going. So check that out. That sort of low cost handsets, and also Migo and sort of map as the future of the basic UI. So interesting there. But next week we're going to have some stuff on the Sony Ericsson Vivas. Really interesting handset and the hardware capabilities, particularly the video. So we've got a whole bunch of that, talking about its capabilities, so a walkthrough of the device, and also hearing from the, you know, one of the designers, particular elements they've done to make it feel smaller in the hand and fit into the hand better. We've also got, I think it's Michael Helmis, talking about Ovi Maps and sort of the location strategy for Nokia. We've got Lee Williams doing a walkabout and talking about some of the Symbian announcements at MWC. we've got a whole bunch of developer profiles and sort of people talking about why they've developed on Symbian and the advantages that that brings them coming up, as well as more Nokia executives talking for Christopher David about Sony Ericsson Creations, which is their sort of new developer user-generated data sort of mashup approach. And that, I think, is, you know, a particularly interesting story. There's a lot of practicalities around that that I have maybe more doubts about, but I'm looking forward to sharing those. So, as I say, there is a lot more video to come, and we'll be getting it up onto the site and the YouTube channel, which is www.youtube.com/user/RafeAAS. And so people can get a preview of some of it there, and it will appear on the site in the following few days. Over the next 4 weeks, there's a lot more video to come.
Right then, and not just from you, but we'll maybe come on to what else we're going to be doing the video in next week's podcast, so pay attention to that. I suspect I'm going to have some fun with that. You mentioned there, of course, maps and location, talking to Nokia about that. The impact of Nokia giving Ovi Maps available for free is still reverberating around the smartphone world, and if you thought Nokia were going to stand still now that it's out there, then think again. Steve, what do we got with Maps and Ovi Maps and a new version coming out? They've not stopped with their toys, have they?
Before I go on to version 3.4, which is quite exciting for a reason which is not immediately obvious, I just want to mention that I have had reports coming in of people with Nokia N97s bought SIM-free in the UK who've been waiting for version 21 firmware. I'm wondering where it was. It eventually came out a few days ago, and apparently it came with the new free version 3.3, free navigation version, built into the firmware, which means you don't have to use 10 megabytes of your C disk to install the Maps 3.3, which is a huge saving. I suspect this won't be rolled out until version 22 or later firmware for different N97s. Nokia are obviously rolling this out as and when the timescales allow, so that each device, N97, N97 Mini, X6, 5800, etc., will receive the free maps in firmware at some point in the next cycle. But just be patient. But I'm glad that the UK SIM-free version 21 is now out, because people have been shouting about that for weeks. And I do like to think it was us nudging Nokia that had that effect. So sometimes these things appear a day or two after I've shouted at a particular person. So I hope he's kicking the right backsides.
Okay, there we go. Anyway. UK finally getting a firmware first for a change. So take note, everybody. You complain about it, we're going to remind you of this.
So no, this is last year.
We were last. Oh, I'm going to complain, and that's terrible and disgraceful. And why are we always last?
But they were first with the integrated free maps.
That's right. Yes. See, look, we were first. We were always first. Everybody.
Ewan. So Ewan was right and Ewan was wrong. Let's move on. Yes, Ovi Maps 3.4 was released today as we record this on the Friday, the 26th of February, from Nokia Beta Labs. It claimed to be faster and more accurate, and improved positioning speed, improved accuracy, map zooming with faster speed, improved search for cities with zoom out to city level. But the big thing, the big thing, which is not actually mentioned in the official change log, is that they've added Wi-Fi network positioning. Now, if you think back, I've been a big fan of Maps Booster, which is a little utility from Skyhook, people in the USA, who have a worldwide network, self-healing network of Wi-Fi hotspots and MAC addresses. That's not Apple Mac, that's MAC, the machine addresses, of Wi-Fi routers around the world. A superb system, works very well. It's licensed by all sorts of people, including Apple, for their iPhones and iPods. There's also Google, who have their own rival system, based around their knowledge of where Wi-Fi networks are, based on people who've been using Google Maps for umpteen years now. And rather than license either of these two, Nokia decided to do its own. So there's now three different Wi-Fi network positioning systems in use. And I've just had a statement back from the Skyhook people, who I was rather keen to get their feedback. And they say they'd encourage us to try them side by side and compare performance. They see it as less of a challenge to their business and more of a clear demonstration of how hard it is to build a reliable location system, by which I'm implying that they believe that the Skyhook Wi-Fi network positioning is more accurate than Nokia's, which, given the fact that Nokia are brand new to the game, is probably understandable. But so that'll make an excellent, excellent feature for all about Symbian. So I'm looking forward to putting all three network positioning systems to the test side by side, and we'll see how far Nokia have come and how much work they've still got to do.
Steve, I know one of the things you've done is actually looked into Skyhook Wireless. I mean, something like, you know, noting where a Wi-Fi hotspot is and sort of doing a bit of GPS data tied to it seems like something would be fairly trivially done, especially if, like Nokia, you've got 3-4 million installs of Ovi Maps. But is it more complex than that as a process?
Well, it's okay. So there are a few million people wandering out there with Ovi maps, but the only data being used by those devices is the data used to download the assisted GPS, you know, the satellite almanacs of where the satellites are. I've not seen any evidence on any person's phone in any country at any time that any extra data in terms of the Wi-Fi networks being detected around the users are being sent back to Nokia servers. Now, it's possible, I agree, it's possible that some of this has been happening subliminally. Nokia hasn't told anyone that it uses incredibly little data and that no one's noticed. But I find it hard to believe that they have been doing it and that it hasn't been picked up at some point. Now, obviously, from this point onwards, with Maps 3.4 and with Wi-Fi network positioning front and center, then I can quite believe that Nokia are going to be gathering extra data and doing what Skyhook do, which is why as you wander around and the Nokia server say, you should be seeing Wi-Fi points A, B, and C around you, and you think there's A, B, C, and D. Think, okay, there's a new one, someone's moved in, someone's got a new router, so it gets automagically added back into Nokia's databases with the same sort of self-healing system that Skyhook have been using all these years. So I'm sure Nokia are doing something similar. Nokia are rather late out of the gate here, but it's great that it's built in, and I guess it saves users having to spend €3 or €4 on Maps Booster. But I will put all three systems to test, so watch for that on All About Symbian.
Okay, look forward to seeing that. The other thing I noticed in Ovi Maps 3.4, they've actually added back in the ability to do a location lookup or a location find from an address, so that when you're saying drive to this location, instead of choosing it from favourites or from a search or from a point of interest, you can now choose it from an address, and that comes straight out of the contacts database. I think that's just a nice example of the integration, so that if you've got, you know, addresses entered into your contacts database, you don't need to enter any extra information to find a contacts address. You can just use that directly, and I'd like to see that happen a bit more obviously. Indeed, I'd like to see something in the contacts application that allowed you to, you know, have an address highlighted and say, you know, drive me to this address directly, as well as having it the other way around, which, as I say, is now in Ovi Maps 3.4. But it's good to see them continuing to update this, and certainly for a beta it seems remarkably stable. But I would urge people, if it's mission critical, it's better not to use betas on your phone, although in this instance I think both of us have installed it and haven't had any problems. Looking at some of the internet reports, a few people have had problems getting this to install, so, you know, your mileage may vary as ever.
I refer you to the aforementioned discussions about free disk space on Drive C, but certainly for most people, if you remember to physically remove any old versions of Nokia Maps, any old versions of Ovi Maps on your C disks first, that should take you up in the 30 megabytes free region, and then installing a 10 megabyte new version shouldn't be too much of a problem. But if you start with less than 20 meg free and you don't delete the old versions, you will run into problems because it will simply run out of temporary disk space. Also worth noting that in the new version, the old satellite status bar, which is the little green thing, which the more green you got, the better your GPS signal, that indicator has been removed, presumably because you've now got multiple ways of finding data, your position. And in many cases, the Wi-Fi network positioning will actually be a lot more accurate. So showing a poor GPS signal when it actually knows exactly where you are would seem rather unreliable. But rather than just remove the indicator, I do rather wish they'd introduced a two-tier indicator with like purple for Wi-Fi and green for GPS or something along those lines, so that you could see both indicators and get an overall feel for how accurate your position was. But I'm sure they're still tweaking this. Is still a beta, so let's see what happens for the final release, and let's hope beyond hope that they do actually release it for the remaining feature pack 2 devices like the N96, and we just hope that it's also going to be backported to the N95 and E71. I realize that there may be technical issues there, especially with this new network positioning, so that may not happen now.
Yeah, I asked about that at MWC, and it was pretty clear that no final decision had been made, and it's really a question of resources, because there is some extra technical effort required to get it back onto the FeaturePack 1 devices. No real surprise there. I wouldn't necessarily hold my breath anytime soon.
Yes, essentially how far we've come. I've been playing with this old Nokia E61i, rather battered and bullet ridden, you'll be seeing a big feature on that, All About Symbian, where I look at the differences in functionality between that and what some of the modern devices. And it's incredible how far we've come in just 2 or 3 years. The E61i, which I thought was a reasonably recent, thumb QWERTY keyboarded S60 third edition device, you can't even download any version whatsoever of Nokia Maps for it. Nokia Maps / Ovi Maps totally postdates that device, and there isn't a version you can physically install, legally install on it. That's how recent Nokia Maps and Ovi Maps are, and how far we've come in 2 or 3 years. And like Rafe, I'm just blown away by the fact that Nokia are still pushing the boundaries. There was a big feature on, I think it was in Gadget this morning, as we record this, comparing the BlackBerry maps, the Verizon maps with Ovi Maps, and also the Google Android, then the navigation system on the Nexus One, and comparing the three. And Ovi Maps came out quite favorably. I think even the Americans are starting to get now that, hey, with Ovi Maps, you don't need a network connection all the time. You can preload the entire world in terms of streets, and you get voice navigation forever. And I think that kind of blanket coverage is even hitting home in the USA. So that's got to say something.
Yeah, and I think this illustrates a good point. People often talk about the way that Symbian or S60 hasn't changed in the last 5 years, and I think it's really a reflection of the fact that times have changed, in one sense that it's a lot more about Nokia becoming a solutions company and thus seeing the big changes in things like Nokia Maps and Nokia Messaging. And in some ways I think that brings much richer functionality to the devices than hardware changes, be it, you know, increasing megapixels. I think the big missing picture really is the UI, but as we know, that is about to be fixed fairly dramatically in Symbian 3 and 4. So I think what you'll do, you know, looking at this time next year when the Symbian 4 devices will be out, you'll have, you know, a UI that is, you know, cutting edge in terms of recent developments, and, you know, can't make any final judgments about it now, running with, you know, a whole bunch of solutions from Nokia, which will make for a very compelling overall solution. But yes, I still get amazed by just how quickly things move. You know, and you look back just a few years to when it was smart to go was just a twinkle in the eye, and up till now where Ovi Maps has become a central feature point in a lot of Nokia devices.
And it's probably fair to say that Nokia know what we're going to see on the devices in the next 2 or 3 years, and it'll be just as astounding. If, you know, when you look through the Finnish reserve and the sort of hesitancy to show emotion that even the stuff we saw at MWC from ANSI, it's just like, I know what's coming. It looks really, you know, really exciting. If he was American, he would be bouncing off the walls. But as it was, he was Finnish, so he just kind of lifted an eyebrow.
Absolutely. It's kind of the Finnish sense of what they call sisu, which doesn't really translate very well into the English language, but it's I would describe it as sort of resoluteness, you know, striving forward in their own way, a sort of not courage in the face of adversity. As I said, it doesn't really translate, but Nokia very much believe in doing things their own way, and they have a lot of self-confidence. Now, that does mean, I think, that they sometimes meet mass market trends, and you can look at things like flip phones and thin phones and even and arguably touchscreens as well. But that sort of a never-ending forward motion is what has taken Nokia to the 40% market share, and, you know, has bounced back in smartphones recently, and certainly a lot of signs in terms of improvements on the solution side of things that things are going to develop further. And ANSI did hint about some of the things that were coming, you know, the idea that Symbian would be the computer for everybody going forward, and that MeeGo would be the way that rich contextuality is used to marry the physical and the virtual world. We keep saying it on this podcast, but, you know, the future is exciting, and I think it's only going to accelerate in the next few years. There is something of a perfect storm coming in terms of new solutions, new versions of the software platform, changing the software making model to open source, together indeed with things like, you know, silicon changes. This, we didn't really talk much about this at MWC, but OMAP4 was announced along with a whole bunch of other things, and actually a lot of it's to do with decreasing the die size on chipsets from sort of 60 nanocentimeters or down to about 40, and that means you'll be able to fit more chips into the same space, and it's things like the symmetric multiprocessing that we've talked about in the past, multiple cores, integrated graphics, which are going to create the sort of resources necessary to generate and drive a lot of this next generation stuff we talk about. And so I do believe that the next 18 months to 2 years will be very similar in some ways to the revolution that happened with the first smartphones, and then again when the N95 came out. And just as those were big surprises and difficult to predict the way the market addressed them and reacted to them, we'll have the same thing happen again.
It reminds me of how Frank Miller described Batman which is you should never see him running. You should stand down, and the criminal goes, "Ah, it's Batman!" Turns around, they run away down a million alleys, and then he just runs smack into Batman a couple of miles down the road. And you haven't seen Batman move, but he's moved. And I always think that Nokia is a bit like that. It's just like, oh no, we're Nokia, we're just phones. Bang, oh, hold on, all your maps is fine. You've got all these new handsets. How did you manage that? It's a Batman.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I mean, this is not to say that Nokia doesn't have its problems, and we see a lot of commentary about how it's falling behind.
Indeed, yeah.
Or whatever, and I absolutely accept that. But the idea that you can write it off altogether is, I think, quite frankly, ridiculous. And just as a lot of the other platforms have a lot of positive buzz and positive talking up around them, I think it wouldn't hurt sometimes for your commentators in general to look at Nokia in the same way, because it's very easy to criticise a platform, and Nokia seems to have been attracting a disproportionate amount of that. Whereas, you know, you look at something like, for example, Samsung's Beta, which hasn't really delivered on its promise, the issues around Android with fragmentation, or Google in China, you know, what role does Google play versus the manufacturer? You know, similarly with Apple, you know, is there concern about the degree of lock-in and control of Apple of the ecosystem? You know, a lot of the time, rather than looking at those negative points, people see them from a positive point of view. You know, in the case of Apple, it's, by doing that lock-in, they can create a tremendously positive user experience. Google is able to leverage its own brand and own services to create a compelling experience. So why not look at Nokia in the same way and say its global scope and scale means that it is uniquely positioned and it's executed well on maps, it's executing well on messaging. But because perhaps, you know, it's been around longer, people tend to be more negative about it. So we do appreciate that sometimes we can come across slightly as cheerleaders for Symbian and Nokia in this podcast. But maybe that's because very few other people do it. And I think in the next few years, it will be interesting to see how the market breaks down. And as Nokia themselves say, it's a massive ecosystem and will only get bigger. I think the belief here is that Nokia will be a major player. It will not be the only player, but it will be one of the big players. The sort of extension to that is who will be the other big ones. And maybe that's a debate for another day.
It's almost like, you know, if we stay with the Batman analogy, all the other bloggers and commentators are the thief running away, looking behind them, going, "He's behind me. I'm safe. I've not been captured. I've managed to get away with it." And at some time, bang. But right now we've hit our wall. Coming up to the end of that, we've got a couple of questions which we're going to hold over till next week. They're not that time critical. If you want to fire your questions into the podcast and give us some things to address, or you're not sure about stuff, or you like us to look at a bit of strategy we might not have considered before, then do drop us the emails at rafe@allaboutsymbian.com, or you can, as I said before, nudge us on Twitter. It's always great to hear your comments on the show. If you're an iTunes user, then why not take just a couple of minutes and you can post a review and star rating of the All About Symbian podcast up there on iTunes. We can't get in to edit that, so what you put up there, what you see up there, is going to be your genuine feelings, none of us getting in the way or taking out the bad ones or beefing up the good ones. I'd be very much appreciated if you could do that as well. It's also appreciated from me to my co-stars on the show as well, both Steve Litchfield,
a star, I like the fact that I'm a star, hey, yes, bye for now everyone.
You're a ball of hydrogen slowly burning and turning into helium and looking for some Lemsip, and also Rafe Blanford as well.
Thank you for your inimitable style as ever, Ewan.
Indeed. And I'm going to go away and leave everybody with one final thought. How did Steve manage to get bullet holes in an E61?
Oh, no, there's
still
a story
keep it
there.
Running.
You won't believe it when you see the photos.
intrigue, mystery. Same bat time, same podcast, RSS feed, same time, same channel next week. For now, everybody, ta-ra.